From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
After Australian Zomi Frankum and several other aid workers died in an Israeli strike in Gaza, criticism of how Israel is conducting this war has increased further. The Albanese government has appointed a special advisor, former chief of the Australian Defence Force, Mark Binskin, to investigate the adequacy of the Israeli inquiry into the incident. On another front, Foreign Minister Penny Wong has this week floated the possibility of recognition for a Palestinian state ahead of a more general two-state solution as a path for a long-term peace settlement in the Middle East. This possible course, which has been canvassed internationally by various countries, including Britain, is an advancement on the Australian government's well-established commitment to a two-state solution. Wong's comments have further widened the partisan gulf over the war, with the coalition strongly critical of her stance. To discuss the government's view and the Middle East crisis more generally, we're joined today by Labor MP Josh Burns, who holds the Melbourne seat of McNamara, which has a significant Jewish community. Burns himself is Jewish and visited Israel in the earlier stages of the conflict. Josh Burns, this conflict has become increasingly complex for Australia, and in particular for the Labor government, to respond to. Where do you see things being at now?
Well, Michelle, first of all, thank you very much for having me on your program. I want to take a step back and maybe give some of your listeners a bit more of an insight into my own personal story on this and the lens in which I approach this and my family's connection to this situation, because my grandfather was in Israel in the early parts of its creation and was a founder of one of the original kibbutz in the middle of the country. And he actually left Israel in the 1950s because there was an incident that happened where there was some conflict between Israelis and local Palestinians, and it was really distressing to my grandfather, and he hated it. He hated the fact that there was conflict around him. He just lived through World War II, and he didn't want to raise his family in a place where there was conflict. And he said he made one of the hardest decisions of his life to leave Israel and to go and start a new life in another country. And it was eventually Melbourne where he settled down. I mean, this conflict has been one that has been passed down from generation to generation. And my family's, you know, my family has been desperate to see an end to this and are desperate to see an end to the cycle of violence. It's extremely distressing for the Jewish community and for people around the world to witness their family and friends in this cycle of violence. And I desperately want to see an end to it. So I think it's really important in any conversation that we have in the Middle East that people give each other the benefit of the doubt to say what we actually want to see here is some sort of peaceful resolution for two people who deserve to live with dignity and respect and freedom. And that's certainly how I try to approach this issue and what I hope other people how they would approach it when having conversations. In saying all of that, I think that we are in a turning point, and I think that obviously the relationship between the United States and Israel is at a very tense point, and that the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Israel are in conflict about where the direction out of this is and how much you know, what military action can continue and all of those things. So Australia will exist within that context and do so with great difficulty, I think.
This week, Foreign Minister Penny Wong floated the possibility of the recognition of a Palestinian state ahead of a settled two-state solution. And that's caused a lot of controversy, including criticism from some Jewish groups. Can you explain what's being said here and what the implications are, and what sort of feedback have you got from Jewish people?
Well, let's start with the Jewish community, because I feel a deep sense of responsibility to represent every single person in my electorate. But I the Jewish community is a minority group in Australia, and I do feel a deep sense of responsibility to be a leader and a representative for them. And I think that the Jewish community is extremely stressed at the moment, that the feelings of anxiety towards what's happening in the Middle East is real, and the anxiety towards how Australia reacts to it is real as well. And I think that needs to be acknowledged and validated. I think the Jewish community is frustrated that there are still over 130 hostages being held in Gaza, and that seems to have not been a feature in a lot of the discussions over the last 24 hours. And that's a real hurdle that needs to be overcome in order to move to the next phase of this and to move beyond the current conflict. Australia wouldn't accept 130 of its people being held hostage. And I think the Jewish community feels a sense of frustration about that. I also think that, I desperately want to see a peace agreement signed between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Michelle, I really want to see that in my lifetime. It will be a magnificent day for humanity where we can properly see this conflict that has been devastating for decades end. But how we get there is obviously extremely important. And I think the Jewish community is aware that it needs to be a viable pathway towards that, and that Israel and the Palestinians need to be a part of that process. I think there is a nervousness around what role Hamas would play in all of that. And Australia has been very clear, and I think this is something that was really important with the foreign minister's speech, is that Australia recognises, and the prime minister has reiterated this in the last 24 hours, that Hamas cannot have a role in the future governance of Gaza, that any world that we're talking about with the future of the Palestinian people cannot be one where the there is a terrorist organisation at the head of that. And I think we desperately want to see an end to the cycle of violence. And so how do we get there? Well, I want there to be a negotiated outcome, but I also understand that there is a terrorist group who still hold over 130 hostages, who are still threatening to carry out further attacks like what they did on October 7. And Australia has recognised that terrorist group can have no further role in the future governance of a Palestinian state. So how do we navigate through that? That's a very difficult question, and one where I think that there are no simple answers.
Do you think that the death of the aid workers, including Australian Zomi Frankum, has changed things fundamentally for the Australian government? And doesn't the appointment of a special advisor, former Defence Chief Mark Binskin, to investigate the adequacy of the Israel inquiry send the message that we don't trust the Israelis?
No, I don't think it's as extreme as that. I think that the likely outcome here is that there be cooperation between the Israelis and the Australian government to give certainty to the families. I mean, this is obviously a very distressing situation, and the family of Zomi Frankum deserves respect and deserves Australia's efforts to try and ensure that all efforts are done to understand what happened and to ensure that it doesn't happen again. I mean, that is a way of honouring Ms. Frankum, and I think our condolences and our efforts need to be respectful of all of that. I do think that there is likely to be cooperation. The advice that I've been given is that there is cooperation on this matter, and that the information that can be provided will be provided to Australia.
You don't think the Israelis will hold back giving access to what might be sensitive information?
I think there's going to be cooperation here.
Given the company's ties to the Israeli Defence Force, should the Australian government consider reviewing the $900 million contract awarded this year to Israeli defence company Elbit Systems to supply some military equipment to Australia?
I think it's important to make a couple of points. The first one is that there has been a lot of misinformation about our defence arrangements with the Israelis. And let me be very clear, because the Greens have put out a lot of misinformation and have been running running a campaign saying we sell weapons to the Israelis, which we have not done for 5 years. So there is no weapons, Australian weapons, that are provided to Israel, and nor have there been for 5 years. And any suggestion to the contrary is a blatant lie. So I think it's important to make that point. The second point is that what we're talking about here is a defence communication system that was built into a tender led by Hanwha, which is a South Korean company, for our land vehicles. And this is a communication system that has been awarded. And it's designed to protect Australian soldiers. It's not designed to be a part of the conflict between the Israelis or the Palestinians. This is part of a defence system that is there to protect Australian soldiers, of which the Australian government should always take the principle that the best technology should be used in order to protect our people when we ask them to go and serve our country. And we're not in a position, our policy is not to have a position where we're not engaging with particular companies. And I don't think that should change, because I do think that this benefits us and it doesn't, it is not for the Israelis.
You spoke earlier about opinion in the Jewish community, but how much diversity is there within that community about Israel's policy and its prosecution of this war and the incredibly high civilian loss of life?
Well, the Jewish community is not homogenous in Australia. It is made up of people from all different corners of society and different political perspectives and different religious backgrounds and different national backgrounds. The Jewish community in Australia is a magnificent melting pot of even multiculturalism, and it's a wonderful thing. I think it is important to note, though, that the Jewish community has experienced historic levels of anti-Semitism since October 7. And this has been one of the most difficult things for the community to swallow, is that even within 24 hours of a major terrorist attack happening in Israel, where family and friends of the Australian Jewish community were, including one Australian, was killed, there were protests on the streets of Australia against what had happened. And it kind of makes it feel like, for the Jewish community, that it would be the equivalent of protests happening after the Bali bombings or after another major terrorist attack. It feels surreal, and it feels like the Jewish community is facing a huge barrage of anti-Semitism. I also think it's true to say that the Jewish community in Australia, just like the Israeli community, has very mixed feelings about the current Israeli administration. In Israel, there are huge protests going on, and that prior to October 7, there was significant political differences being expressed by the Israeli people inside the country. And I think that it's true to say that would be reflected in Australia as well. And yet people often target Jewish community institutions or Jewish community organizations or people as if they are somehow some extension of the Israeli government. And that is completely unacceptable and completely unfair. And these are ordinary Australian citizens who obviously care deeply about the state and care deeply about their family and friends in Israel, but are not responsible for the actions of the Israeli government. So I think this has been probably the most difficult period that I can think of in my lifetime to be a Jewish person in Australia. And I think that the Jewish community feels under immense pressure, and it saddens me greatly that this has been such a difficult time for the Jewish community in Australia.
Do you think that members of that community, or more members, have become more critical of the Israeli government as things have gone on?
I think it's mixed, and I don't want to speak on behalf of a homogenous group. And I think that some people, like in any political equation, some people are supportive and some people are not. And it's important not to. The most important point is to remember that we're talking about Australian citizens. They are not the Israeli government, and that anyone who's targeting a Jewish community institution or targeting a Jewish person or targeting someone, as we've seen on social media, at universities and at creative institutions, That is, you are targeting Jewish Australians. You're not targeting the Israeli government. You're not targeting an embassy. You're targeting your fellow citizens. And that I think is blatant anti-Semitism, where people are trying to conflate the two. So, Michelle, I think it's mixed, and that's what you would expect. But what's really important is that people understand that Jewish Australians deserve the rights to be free from discrimination and vilification, just like every other Australian.
How do you think this conflict will play out politically, domestically? You have a lot of Jewish voters in your inner Melbourne seat of McNamara, which includes Caulfield and St Kilda, where a lot of Jewish people live. Some of your colleagues, especially in Western Sydney, have a lot of pro-Palestinian voters, where concerns are obviously being expressed in demonstrations and through other channels. Where is the political fallout here? What are the implications?
It's a very difficult question. I think it's very important that there is room for acknowledgement of the experiences of both sides in Israel and the Jewish community. It's very important to recognize that there has been suffering on the Palestinian side, and for the Islamic community or the Palestinian community in Australia to understand that the Israelis have a right to live in security and freedom. And I think that the government is trying to reflect that, but it is obviously extremely difficult, and emotions are extremely high. And I do believe that there are people who are trying to exploit this for their own political gain. I mean, we've seen in the seat of Wills, the Greens are mentioning this foreign policy question as their main motivation to fight the seat. And this is, you know, that is a very domestic political agenda for such a complicated and difficult foreign policy question. So I think that our responsibility is to try and rise above it and to try and support communities. And my role is to try and support the people that I represent and to try and ensure that they have a voice in government, to try and support them and ensure that their values are being heard around the government decision table. And there are moments where obviously I am able to have the views of the community understood and reflected in Australian government policy. And there are moments where that is obviously a challenge, but my job is to not worry about what's going to happen at the next election, but rather worry about what are the experiences of my community right now and how can I best represent them around the government tables.
So what's this been doing to relations within the caucus? Because your colleagues like Ed Husic, for example, a Muslim, has spoken out strongly, being very critical of Israel in the way it's conducted itself. Do you have conversations with him and other colleagues who would have a different view from you on issues in this conflict?
Of course I do, and Ed's my friend. I've been friends with Ed Husic for a long time, and Anne Ali is a dear friend of mine, and Fatima Payman, the three Islamic members of our caucus, I speak to regularly, and I admire them all very much. And I think it's very important, Michelle, that we have a space where we can have these respectful dialogues. And disagreement is okay. I mean, of course it's okay. And of course I don't see the issue in exactly the same way as Ed. And that's something that can be very difficult, and it can be highly emotive and it can be highly charged. But I also think that as we started this conversation, I believe that Ed wants to see a peaceful resolution here, and he wants to see people living in dignity. And I hope that he thinks the same of me. I hope that he thinks that I am coming at this from a perspective of wanting to see a peaceful resolution between two peoples and a peaceful resolution of a conflict that has been devastating for my family and my family's life from generation to generation. And I think there has to be a space where we are talking to one another, because if we can't talk to one another, how can we expect the Israelis and the Palestinians to?
So do minds get changed? Does your mind get changed, or his mind, on particular points as a result of those conversations, or are really viewpoints entrenched?
I'm always open to conversations, and I'm always open to the views of my colleagues, and I try and engage respectfully and with an open mind every time I speak with them. This is a dynamic conflict, and things can change and happen, and you have to understand whatever's happening at the time. But I think it is important to have dialogue and to try and have understanding, and I will continue to do so.
And have you at any point reached out to the Palestinian, pro-Palestinian communities? Have you visited any of those electorates or sought to meet any of their leaders?
Of course, and I even went and met with representatives of the Palestinian Authority in East Jerusalem. So I've not only met with the Palestinian community here in Australia, I've been in the Middle East in late last year and met with the Palestinians themselves, and had a very warm and difficult conversation about the current circumstances and the pathways out of it, and what their ambitions are and what they seek and how they want to build a future for their people. And the Palestinian people are not my enemy. I see the Palestinian community in Australia as a fundamental part of our Australian society, and I hope they would see the Jewish community is in exactly the same way. And I think that having a openness to a shared future is the only way through this. And that's the same motivation as to why there has been bipartisan support for a two-state solution for decades, and why the dream of seeing a peace agreement between an Israeli administration and whatever comes next after a post-Hamas world is something that I'm very hopeful for still, even though it feels like it's a long way away.
And just finally, the Prime Minister has on a number of occasions expressed concern about the damage this conflict can do to social cohesion, indeed is doing to social cohesion. Do you see this as a major and lasting threat to harmony in our multicultural society, or do you think this will pass?
I'll say two things. One is an observation on the broader political situation in the Middle East, and the other one is on Australia's domestic situation, because I do think the two, unfortunately, will have a correlation. I am very nervous, Michelle, that this conflict is, I think that the current phase of the conflict in Gaza is going to wrap up sooner rather than later. But I also am worried that there is a broader geopolitical situation unfolding in the Middle East that means that this potential for a wider conflict is only going to increase. The proxies of the Iranian regime are ready and are aiming serious military arsonry at Israel at the moment, mainly being Hezbollah. Hamas has been obviously their capability has been undermined, but Hezbollah have the scale of tenfold of what Hamas is capable of. They are far more highly trained soldiers, and Iran has equipped them with 160,000 precision guided missiles and other missiles. So there is a real risk of an escalation of this conflict into the north of Israel. It is something that obviously the Americans are very keen to avoid because of the broader regional implications, and we don't want to see it escalating. But I am very nervous that there is another chapter of this conflict that is still yet to unfold, and I think that will have obviously huge impacts around the world, including here in Australia. So I'm optimistic that at some point this will end in Gaza, and that the people of Gaza will have an opportunity to rebuild their lives, and I obviously want that for the people of Gaza. But I am nervous about a broader regional conflict and the impact that would have on Australia. And I'm nervous about how that would play out in our communities. So I think that's the first point. The second point is that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict has been going on for, as we all know, for decades. And it has been one where there are fig leaves, and there are green shoots of incredible people trying to build a better future. And whether it be through organizations like Project Rosanna, who help train Palestinian health professionals like doctors and nurses inside Israel, whether it be, I've got a friend of mine who's moved over there, and he builds peace communities between Israeli and Palestinian children. There are shoots of hope that are happening in the region, and I hope that there would be similar sorts of opportunities here in Australia where we can try and reach out and build connections between people. But it is very, very hard to grow a tree, and it can be chopped down in a second. Trust can be shattered very, very quickly. So I think you have to hold on to hope, and I think you have to try and continuously try and reach across to people from all different communities to build a shared future. But I am very nervous about what the next chapter might be, what might be coming next, and what the future has in store for the Middle East and for Australia. But if you don't have hope, Michelle, what can you hold on to?
Indeed. Josh Burns, thank you very much for talking with us today. That's all from the Conversations Politics podcast. Thank you to my producer, Ben Roper. We'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevier. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.